Welcome, pudding people, to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. I'm your host, Ken Seymour. Today, I have a wonderful guest, an actress that you might recognize in a handful of recent projects that you might have seen on Netflix or some of the other streaming options that are available to us. We have the wonderful Amy McKenzie.
Hi. Yeah, applause.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I am doing fabulous. Any day I get to talk to people that I've never met before and talk about the things that I love is a fantastic day.
I agree.
So I had a question I wanted to start out with because it's just kind of always my thing. I remember back to the days when I was in college 300,000 years ago and just looking at the path that we take throughout our educational beginnings and where we end up. And I have to ask, how does a degree in math end in acting?
A degree in math is handy for so many things. No, I mean, that is such a huge question, but I can touch on a few things that kind of help tie it together. First of all, there's just in general a huge connection between music and math. There are some great writings about all of that. I think math is a very creative language once you get past sort of the nuts and bolts that we think of as being really boring, you know, and it's all taught wrong. That's another thing. It's all taught. You remember, did you learn your times tables first, which is just like random memorization, right? But if you start with little kids with really interesting problems about, you know, how much space can we get out of this, you know, just they're really creative. And so it's a creative language. But I feel like I've always been an actor, always. I from the time I could talk, it's what I did. My family is very academic, very math science oriented. My mom was a professor. And we loved the arts. Like, I grew up being a great appreciator of the arts, but nobody ever even thought that you could have a career in that. So I was always kind of shooting off on my own, trying to figure out how to do that. I thought I was going to major in theater in college. And I got there and I didn't love the program. So I got a degree in math because it was super fast to get out of school really fast. And I loved it. I love math. I have kind of sort of an analytical brain too. But then I just kept coming back to acting. Like, I just kept coming back to it. I couldn't shake it. And then so many things in life came up. I don't know if we'll have time to talk about all of it, but finally now here at my advanced age, my kids are grown and gone. I can get out in the world and do this thing. So it's been really fun.
I'll just put you in a very unique position to explain to those on set around you how PEMDAS actually works and then start that argument everywhere you go.
Right.
So was there a specific play or show you watched that gave you that initial just kind of surge like, ooh, I want to do this? Or were you in like a school play? It's like, I like when they're all looking at me and the clapping is nice.
Yeah. I grew up in the era of the Carol Burnett Show, right? Mm. So in the early days of Saturday Night Live, and my family, as you know, as much as we never thought about, you know, getting a degree in something that had to do with the arts or going to, you know, I was just right, just a little bit older than like Tina Fey and Amy Poehler and the people that would like go to Second City and start building and build. You know, I didn't know, and that was not in my world at all. I had no understanding of that. But the Carol Burnett Show, we made movies at home all the time. We did sketches all the time. My whole life was just putting together funny things and entertaining the family. And I was just doing the thing all the time, and was good at it. And it just was effortless. And I remember thinking, even when I was like in middle school and high school, I remember thinking, I wonder if I have a personality of my own. Because I could just like take on the persona of anyone, or like I was so interested in that perspective, you know, what it would be like if you walk like this, what would it be like if you talk like this, what would it, so it was just innate, like that feeling was just innate. I just didn't have a channel for it early on and kind of got thwarted a lot of times early on with, you know, like I said, going to school, didn't love the theater department. I Went to Circle in the Square in New York for a little while, and that was, a lot of women in the 80s talk about what it was like pre-Me Too movement in those arenas, and there was a little bit of that, kind of some favors that someone would do for me, and nothing bad ever happened, but I knew what was coming was after all I did for you, I was like, ugh. So like there was a lot of like stop and start, but I always kept a hand in it. I always kept some sort of substantial part of my life in it, all along the way.
And that was the reason that on your list of skills you have listed jujitsu, right? Just in case.
Yeah, I did jujitsu with my kids. My kids were big soccer players, my two boys, and we're all just really physically active. Like we all get a little weird if we don't run around all the time. And so in the off season of soccer, from the time they were little, we would go and do jujitsu. It was really fun. It's fun. I would love to explore more martial arts, but it's a
Now,
great,
are we talking
yeah.
about Asian jiu-jitsu or are we talking about Gracie
We're talking about jujitsu with the guy that lived across the street. It was like this little dojo that this guy started. I have no idea. It was just pretty informal, but super fun. Super fun.
It's always good. It's always good. And plus,
Yeah.
you stay fit and it's and you
Yeah.
get to have some fun while doing it. I mean,
Yeah.
you seem to pick those things that you can put on your resume that will not only have, that functionality for whatever part you may get, but also just kind of are fun. I see a
Yeah.
lot of pictures of saddles on your Instagram page.
Oh yeah, I grew up in Wyoming. So that was that picture, if you ever go to Casper, Wyoming, you have to go to Lou Taubert's Ranch Outfitters. It's like a 4 or 5 story building built, in the not last century, but the one before probably. No, maybe not, probably in the last century. And one whole floor is just all the saddles. So yeah, that was a fun.
Did you get a lot of chances to ride? Have you ever been able to actually put that into practice on any of the projects you've worked on?
No, but I am based out of Colorado right now. That's kind of where my home base is. I worked 3 times in New York last year, 3 times in LA, once in Texas, once in New Mexico, and once in Colorado. So I'm kind of in the middle. I kind of bounce around, so Colorado's a good place to be. And Taylor Sheridan does so much of his stuff, this side of the Mississippi. And every time we audition for one of the projects, even if it like, no, not on the Madison. But some of the other projects I've auditioned for him, it always asks your horseback riding ability, and I put intermediate now. At one point, it was expert. My high school boyfriend was a pro rodeo guy, and
Oh wow.
I rode horses a lot. And yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. When I was looking again at that list of skills that you have, it's like, well, she lists horseback riding more than once. She's like, I've got the regular and I've got the cowboy and it's like,
Yeah,
what's the
yeah.
difference? You got a hat on one of them.
There are different ways of riding. There are really different ways of riding. My favorite is just, being out in an open field and just being able to go. But there's some very, a whole different culture of English riding and,
Right.
really getting the horse to behave and turn and, very fussy. That's hard. And jumping, like, I don't know how to do that. That takes a lot of discipline. I just want to go out and
Oh,
ride.
yeah, I think that part would scare me quite a bit. It's like I'm definitely coming off this horse.
Yeah, you see it happen. They
Right.
run up to the jump and stop, and guess where you go?
Yep. Inertia. Not much you can do about that.
Right, right.
So when you're working in traditional theater, I mean it's always kind of no matter what you're doing, it's fun. But when you were approaching it, did you go, it's like I'm going to focus specifically on acting, or did you take the more holistic approach where it's like, I want to know what it's like to, manage the props, I want to be able to know how the lighting works. Did you kind of go from all angles?
I pretty much purely came at it as an actor, from early on. And then when I supported myself as an actor for many years in Denver, and it was primarily theater. There were a lot of commercials, a lot of non-union industrial shoots, some big films that came through. I got to work on a John Sayles movie that came through, a couple others. Sometimes a national commercial would come through, but most of it was theater. I got my Actors Equity card before I got my SAG card. And so I started out as an actor, but in some of these smaller theaters, You end up having to do some of it yourself. You have to, starting with wardrobe. Like, I worked at a theater for a long time. It was a professional theater, and they gave us, eventually I ended up getting equity contracts from them. But in the program, it would say, costumes provided by those who wear them. There was a lot of, so you'd get that
Okay.
part of it. And so, not so much into the really technical things like lighting or, even set design. I would sometimes, volunteer on a Saturday to come help build a set or tear down a set, but I didn't presume to be knowledgeable enough to design something.
That
So
makes
yeah,
sense.
I like that part of it. I like that. Yeah, I'll come help you. I'll come paint for a day or whatever. So I did some grunt work too.
That's got to be fun, though. Also, you're talking about doing that little bit of the commercial work and doing the trucks, the Ford trucks. I can imagine it's like, oh, that's me. And all you're hearing, Sam Elliott, is it, we're doing Ford trucks and this, get your rugged piece of equipment from us. I just see that voiceover. It's like, that's no, wait, right there, that's me.
I did. That's funny you say that. My first national commercial was a Ford commercial. And it came at such a great time in my life. Oh my God. I needed it. So I got really sick in 2006. I was sick for almost a year. And that commercial, I shot it right before I got sick. And a few residuals came in that just were like, oh man, what would I have done without that? It's crazy.
Now, all theater is work. It's hard work, and a lot of the people that enjoy it, a lot of times, if you're just kind of a cursory fan or even not a fan, just it's not going to reflect. You're not going to see it on purpose because you're not supposed to see it. But the amount of effort that you have to put into it is substantial. When you're lucky enough to be in a production that resonates with you, the amount of effort seems to kind of melt away a little bit. Do you have any that just in your mind, it's like, man, it was hard, but this was my peak favorite time of doing theater.
Yeah, absolutely. One that comes to mind is I did a couple different productions of A.R. Gurney's Sylvia. I don't know if you know that play, where I played Sylvia. And we had such a solid cast. And we ran that show off and on for 4 or 5 years in a couple different venues, a couple different cast changes. And if you know the play, it's Sarah Jessica Parker did the role that I played. She did it on Broadway, and I didn't see it, but I can imagine it was amazing. It's super physical. You're the personification of a dog. So it's very much not the opposite. It's not the dogification of a person. So it's not Snoopy from You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. You're not in a puppy suit. You're not panting. You're not, it's what we think our dog is always saying to us. So yeah, you're maybe in a fuzzy sweater, and we did a cool thing with the leash where we just had a nylon flat braided piece of nylon, and we would each hold an end of it, and I'd come up and throw it at him, like, I want to go for a walk. I'd pick it up and throw it again, like how a dog is always dropping. And that show was so physical, running and jumping and bounding and leaping and flying. There's a part where the dog just starts getting the zoomies, and I was wearing these big, heavy Doc Martin boots. And Sarah Jessica Parker, I think, was in her 20s when she did it. I was in my 40s. And I was just, it was so fun. And that play is so smart. It is so smart and so rich, and such a great love story between the couple and between the dog and and just, if you've ever had a pet, if you've ever had a dog, you cannot watch that show without, having some heartstrings pulled. But that, yeah, we would do, I don't think we ever did 8 shows a week with that one. We were doing usually five, maybe sometimes six. The 8 show a week ones, that's a whole different breed. I've done a couple of those, long running, couple of years of 8 shows a week. That's something that you have to get rest and eat right, for sure. But yeah, I think that's one of the reasons, as I get older, it just sounds exhausting at this point. So I haven't done it for a while.
Well, with that production you're talking about, it would be kind of the fun part where you get to make that connection with the audience and endear yourself. And at the very end, yeah, I'm dead. And I can see all of the hearts just ripped out right at the
Yeah. The last line of the show, I think, is,
end.
oh, Sylvia, the wife says, the wife, and you see a picture of this very ordinary dog after seeing the dog and how amazing the dog is, and then you just see this picture of this mutt,
Did you
and then
get to
the
pick?
wife is finally like, They tell the story about how what happened to the dog, and then she passed away. And oh man, yeah, it's brutal.
I did you get to choose the dog picture? Because that would be the thing. I'd always want to personify one type of dog. It's like, I might
Yes. Yeah, and
gold retriever.
we actually used this big kind of golden retriever mix-ish because I always had big Labradors. I have a little rescue now who's 25 pounds. I would play it so differently now because she's very skittish. She's kind of afraid of me, and she's like, "I don't know. I don't think I need to talk. No, just leave me alone. Can you go in the other room?" She's got a little bit of that going on. But the golden retriever, my Sylvia, definitely had a lot of that. She was definitely one to pounce on you and be right in your face and right in your lap.
Yeah,
Yeah.
which is sweet. That's the other thing that always occurs to me, and I don't know how I would handle this because I had some theater experience, but not a ton. Definitely not enough to be put in a situation where you're taking over a part like Crystal Allen, that was performed by so many just top-notch actors over the years. And how do you approach that? Do you let their performance influence you? Do you try and make it your own? Do you blend things together? How much does the director just kind of try and make things fit in the way? How was doing something like that for you?
Yeah, do you just try to pretend like Joan Crawford doesn't exist? Do you just pretend like that production of The Women was so fun. And I was actually shocked to get cast as Crystal Allen. She's the other woman, if you know the play. She's and the script actually has some stuff in I How do I put this? The script actually has some things in there that make her funny, which my whole background was in comedy, which is so funny because now in film and TV, I play such nasty characters. That's all I play is like the really awful people. But so I have this big background in comedy, right? And I had just come off playing Sylvia, that like everybody in town knew me from that. But I liked Crystal in that they wrote her to be quite vulnerable in the play. The play is a little bit different than the movie. For example, there's a scene where Crystal Allen is trying on fancy clothes in the women's, clothing store right next door to the wife. And so on set, there's just a wall between them, and you can see both dressing rooms. And the lights dim in one room, come on in the other, and that scene goes back and forth. So you see Crystal Allen trying on clothes because her new boyfriend is buying expensive clothes. Then her side goes dark, and the wife is next door and saying, "What? She's next door." And then they're listening in. So it's a really fun scene. In the stage direction, there's a part where Crystal is trying on lingerie, right? She's got on lingerie. And it says, as the lights go dark, Crystal tries to remove her lingerie. She cannot. So there's this great, she's being all sexy and sultry, and she's the femme fatale. Lights come up on the other side, and she's trying to get out of her negligee. Can't. Pulling, and all of a sudden, like, well, so there was some really nice
So
touches in there that made,
humanizing.
yeah, and so we added a little bit more to that. But yeah, that was a big shift. That was a big switch for me, but it was really fun.
That was one where I only actually got to see the film. I never saw the stage play. So
Yeah,
I'll have to
the stage
change
play's
that.
great. Truly, 30 women in the cast. 30 women in the cast. Oh my God, that dressing room. Forget the play. We had a ball. There were times where somebody would be telling a story and it'd be like, "Hold on, I got to run out and do my scene," and then come back, and then the punchline would come. But so funny.
So, okay, this is kind of out of nowhere because it's not completely related, but I don't want to forget to ask this. There's another thing that I saw when I was looking over, I mean, because you've been doing this a while and you have skills that you can impart to other people. And I'm fully expecting, like, I'd maybe train somebody at an academy, whatever. And then I saw trained attorneys in acting. So, that piqued my curiosity in that when you say you trained attorneys, is it like in just presence to the jury or, how they hold themselves? What is it that you would teach attorneys?
Yeah, there's a lot of crossover between what a stage actor does and what an attorney does. So courtroom performance is a big deal. Attorneys spend a ton of time knowing the details of their case and not very much time learning how to present it. And there are a lot of attorneys who feel like, well, I said it. I said this thing. Why did they not hear that? So you have to think about how did you say it? How did you tell that story? Boy, that was 5 years of a business that I ran with a really successful attorney here in town, and it was so fun. It was so I did everything from basic courtroom performance, just basic things like voice control and body language and helping people quell their nerves. That's a big challenge for actors, right? Like, oh, I did it so well, and then when I actually went into the audition room, I blew it. Attorneys have the same issue. Like, I practiced at home 100 times, and then I got up there, and everybody's looking at me, and the lights are there, and so working on that. But I also even got into a little bit of argument structure. The structure of the argument, how it should lay out on some longer running cases. It was really fun. It was really interesting. But yeah, think of the similarities. There are, an actor has lines to learn. They have a time they have to show up. The lights come up at a certain time. You have to go. You can't mess up. And then the lights come down. You get your turn. Same thing with attorneys. You have to tell that story. You start and stop. You have a start, a stop. You have an audience. So it was really fun. If you're interested in that, there are a lot of great people that do that, and there are a lot of interesting stories to hear about how that works.
That does sound like it would be very interesting. In my mind, I'm picturing it. They're in the desk, and you're at the front, and then you need to do this, and then you pull up Perry Mason. It's like, do it like he did, and then you pull up Matlock. Do it like he did.
Well, and a lot of times that's the issue, especially for women attorneys, is that they will have role models in their mind from either TV or attorneys that they saw in the past that I had a petite young attorney once, and speaking to her face to face, boy, she was just grounded and powerful and interesting and engaged. And so I was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to be able to bring to her. She got up to do her first, opening argument in front of our class. She's turned into this whole different person. She put her leg up on the podium and she dropped her voice down here. And I was like, what are you doing? And we finally figured out she had had this mentor in law school, this older guy that was just super powerful. He had been a football player, this big, powerful guy. And she just thought, I have to go be someone else. So a lot of it was helping attorneys find their authentic voice, which is what actors do,
That makes
right? And a
sense.
lot of times for women, it's getting their voice register up because they think in order to be heard and to be commanding, you have to drop your voice register. So it's really interesting. This is very interesting.
That does sound like something that I could probably lose myself in for a good
Yeah.
couple of
Yeah.
weeks at the bare minimum.
Yeah.
All right. So doing these things, you've been in, a bunch of plays at this point. You've got some unique experiences. I ask this question to everybody that has ever done any sort of acting professionally. What is something when you were beginning into your career acting that when you were putting together whatever project was not something that you were expecting would have to be thought about or approached or done? You have your imagination of how you think this is going to go. You get there and you go, what's that? I don't, why are we doing this?
I think there are a lot of those, but what jumps into my mind, probably just because of where I'm sitting now, is the understanding. There was sort of a slow understanding finally about what a long haul this is and how you don't just get there. You don't just. It's not like, oh, I've done really good work. I'm a really good actor. Somebody's going to discover me. Someone's going to find me. When my very first TV job was on Better Call Saul, like what a great project to be, have your
Wow.
first out of the gate. And a friend of mine wrote, sort of being funny, saying, oh, congratulations. That's so great. I'm so glad you snagged that. It's the beginning of the end. And he's, just a funny friend. But it was like, oh, that's right. It doesn't mean that because I got that, the next job will be bigger and the next one will be bigger and the next one. So just the understanding that it is this process. And I think a lot of actors who feel like they have some natural ability always get good feedback, always get pats on the back, awards or write-ups or good reviews or whatever. Just feel like at some point somebody will find me and then it will happen. It's like, It doesn't happen that way. It's a really long haul. And there are great stories about actors who, make it and then there's nothing for a while. And they, so it's a process, I guess, that has finally settled in. And I finally have that understanding now.
Did you get a chance to interact with Odenkirk at all while you were doing that?
No, my scene, but I'm not, I mean, I would have loved to have worked with him. I worked with Hector Salamanca, Mark Margolis. I never know where to put the accent on his last name. Amazing guy. And he had done a ton of theater in Denver, so we had a bunch of stuff to talk about. He was in the scene. I didn't interact with him, but the cousins, the two guys that play the cousins, I interacted with. So that was really fun. It was just magical to be there. And then right after I was in the scene, Michael Mando came in, the guy that played Nacho, and I just had been in love with him since Orphan Black, just thinking he was amazing. So I got to meet him and chat with him on set that day. But yeah, it was all magical. That day was magical. It's
Yeah,
great.
I think I that'd be my problem. I would geek out just way too much. Wanting it's like I want to see what you're going to do. Oh, I have to do
Yeah.
something now. Wait, sorry.
I know. I know. It's a little weird. I've met lots of big name people, and I think the anticipation is weirder than when you actually meet them. And then when you're actually shooting, everything is kind of at an apex, right? There's RuPaul, there's Mary Kay Place, there's this amazing set, there's this incredible director. Go. Of course you're gonna do your thing. You're not gonna geek out in that moment.
Right.
But the anticipation or the sometimes sitting around at lunch, it's like, oh my God, it's so and so right there.
I have to think that's one of the instances where when you are an actor that's where you made it. You get to whatever set and then all of a sudden you just get these you catch these small glimpses of it's like the happy happy face.
Yeah.
Like I get to act. It's like, hold on, whoo.
Yeah. The way I've been describing it is, let's say you're in a room, and there's RuPaul. I like notice everything in the room that is not RuPaul, and then the thing that is. It's like,
Right.
oh, there's a chair. There's this. There's oh my God. There's RuPaul. There's a window. There's it. It's like it's such a concentrated energy with the person that's there.
That would be somebody very interesting to meet for sure, because just a high octane energy at any time that I've seen RuPaul.
Unbelievable, unbelievable performer and person. And yeah, he was great. That's great.
Speaking of being able to work with some pretty amazing people, you were in the first episode of the new Dexter prequel, Original Sin, which I have to admit I'm geeking out a little bit about because the original show I did enjoy, but some of the individuals that are kind of part of this particular project between Christian Slater and Sarah Michelle Gellar, it's like that's
Patrick Dempsey. Oh my
right.
God.
I mean,
I know.
it's amazing. What was it like to be on the set and be able to be in the first episode? Because, not everybody's going to love a specific project, but almost everyone gives that first episode a try. So you're going to be one of the things that's remembered in this particular show.
Yeah, that was really nice. That was the first pilot, quote unquote pilot. It was already all picked up and ready to be shot. It wasn't like it was our episode and they chopped that around. But it was the first time I'd been in the first episode of something. And yeah, it was great. It was great. Boy, those two young leads are so good. They're so good. So I spent some time on set with them, and then Christian Slater was there, and he's just, he's just iconic. He's just great. He was really fun. I actually had 3 days on set for that. And when you watch the episode, that's kind of interesting. If you watch the episode and you see how small my part was, but I was there for 3 full days. So there were things that there were shots that I was in that they ended up not taking that shot, but it was important to be there to kind of keep the continuity of here's who's moving into this room and who's.
Right.
But yeah, it was fun. It was fun to watch them at work and at play. They were fun offset, off camera too. Yeah.
That actually kind of brings up an interesting question in projects that you've been involved with, whether it's this is going to be more of a film thing and TV thing than it would be theater, but things get sent to the cutting room floor all the time. But how often do these cut scenes really become important for grounding the performers for the other stuff that they're performing?
That's something you have to keep in mind when you're, I consider myself starting out, even at my age, I'm starting out because I'm relatively new to the film and TV industry outside of Denver, Colorado. So yeah, I'm, 7 years in, and we had a pandemic and a strike in that time. So let's call it three. And so when you're starting out like that, so this is good for anybody who's starting out, you get cast in a co-star role. That's what these small sort of day player roles are. It is not about you. It is, you are there. You're a little puzzle that helps, you're a little puzzle piece that helps draw the picture of what a lead character is, or a main story point is, or the fields to set the tone. Maybe you're just a character there to set the tone. Every extra, even you pan over a group of extras, they're picked really carefully to, do they look really stern? Do they look down and out? Do they look really exotic? Do they look very wealthy? Just all of that is very purposeful. None of it is accidental. So if you get picked, you're this small little piece of that. So if you're 1 or 3 or 4 days on set gets boiled down to the back of your head, it's okay. You got the job, you booked it, and you contributed, right? And so often, if a scene gets cut, it's not because of what you did. It's because of time, or and they really want to keep it to, 56 minutes. This 30 seconds, we can do it another way or whatever. So, you can't take it personally. You just can't. Yeah.
No, but there seems to also be kind of a theme, at least in some of your recent performances, because you're in one show about a murderer, and then you're in another show about murderers and monsters.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a question about this. This is more from maybe the consumption side of things. I get Dexter. The whole thing, why people can kind of get wrapped up in that. One thing I've never really understood is the based on true story, these people were actually killers. These were kind of potentially just awful, awful people. What do you think from, being part of the production, why do you think people gravitate to something like that?
I think it's, those really like monsters, that series is sort of profiling one really extreme, gruesome episode or character, set of characters when you're talking about the Menendez brothers. Because those kind of killers are so few and far between, thank goodness. It's always an interesting character study. And I think people are always fascinated with, if you look at the light and dark within yourself, we all have lightness and darkness. And so take the darkest extreme of any human being. And it's just sort of fascinating, morbidly fascinating. And then I think it's also really interesting to think how those people were made. They weren't made in isolation. So any horrible behavior in our culture is made by our culture. We all, that person was made in our culture. We all participate in our culture. So we all have a sense of belonging in those stories. And so, and plus, I think, nostalgia will always sell, right? Like
That's
so
true.
much of the 70s, 80s, 90s are so fun to see. So both Monsters and Dexter were shot in the 90s. Things took place right around 90, 91. So, man, those wardrobe fittings were so fun. It's like, oh, I think I had these shoes, and before cell phones, I think there, I read somewhere that it's, there's so much being shot now that takes place 70s, 80s, 90s, partly for the nostalgia, but also you don't have to have a big part of it being this, people on their phones, people are interacting face to face. And then with the Menendez brothers, I think it's really interesting to look back on that story now, after the Me Too movement, after our sensibilities have changed about sexual abuse. Every man on that first jury, the men felt like that couldn't happen to a boy. That boys can't be sexually abused. So think how much that has changed and what that would be like. And There's some hope in that too, in that we've become more aware of some of those issues. So maybe that story is less likely to happen now, because
Right.
those kids didn't have anywhere to go. They
No.
didn't have anyone to talk to. They didn't have any remedy. What do you do in that situation? So I think it's really interesting to look back on those stories through the filter of modern sensibilities, and then also think, wow, that was a crazy world then
Right.
when that kind of thing could happen. So.
On the more fun side, in the production of it, having a chance to have a scene with Nathan Lane had to have been so much fun.
Are you kidding me? I mean, that was one where they talk about living in the moment, right? Like really ground yourself and be in the moment. A great exercise in grounding yourself to be in the moment is to sit with Nathan Lane for 3 days. I was nowhere else but in the moment. My whole life did not exist outside that moment. Yeah, but that's another one that's interesting to watch. I think ours was episode 7, maybe. And it was a huge week for Nathan Lane. That scene that we shot was 17 pages of dialogue for him, and it was intercut with all he would say something to us at the dinner party, and then it would cut to showing that thing happen. And some of it was reflecting back on, he was playing Dominic Dunn, so he was reflecting back on the murder of his daughter. He was reflecting back on things that had happened in the courtroom. And so we sat there for 3 days watching him deliver time after time after time. And man, the magic of watching a stage actor. He didn't blow a take. He didn't. There was one take where he said, "I think I took a little long between these two words. Can we, that was the one time where
Oh, yes,
I
I
don't
see
know if you
that.
spent any time on a set. I've seen really good actors who have 4 sentences and they can't string them together in one take. Because you don't have to, not to belittle actors who work a different way, but a stage actor who in every take, I was right next to him, right? And every take was nuanced differently, and it was fun, and he was light, and he interacted with us, and I was like, I just the whole time was
Right.
like, this is a pinch me,
It's always fun with, and it's seeing certain performers, and a lot of them, as a consumer of the product, it's like I always like that person. But the ones that you really love, there's always like that one thing that you see them in. It's like, and it changes your perspective kind of forever. And for me, it was the producers. I just seen him in that. It's like, okay, yeah, I will love Nathan Lane forever. It's just not much you could do there.
Yeah, he's very soulful. He's very he was working seriously. Yeah, and we were all there to support him, and he so it wasn't all just fun and goofy, and it was intense. But afterwards we had some we walked back to set one time and back to base camp, and I chatted with him for a while, and he's just a good guy. He's just interesting, a lot of experience, willing to share. Yeah, it was impressive. I was like, oh, that's great.
Did you get a chance to either meet or interact with the ultimate 80s icon that was also on that cast, Molly Ringwald?
No. Oh man, I wish I would have. She was she?
She was
Was
in,
she in
she's
Monsters?
listed. She was listed in the cast, at least in IMDb, unless they made a mistake, which is not
Who was she? Because I watched the whole series.
well, let's go to the magic of the internets.
IMDb. I just heard her interviewed with Marc Maron. Man, she's amazing. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's always good, and
Just translates a little French literature into English, just as a sideline. She's amazing.
she was Sherri Dahmer, it says.
Oh, that's Dahmer. That was the Dahmer one. So that was the first season.
Ah, okay, that's what I missed.
Eric and Lyle Menendez. So Monsters is an anthology series. So first season was Dahmer. Second season was Menendez Brothers. Third one is
Okay.
Ed Gein.
That makes sense. I was kind of scanning past trying to get to the stuff that was important because I haven't seen any of that show yet. I've got this list of 500 shows that I
Oh,
was like,
yeah.
okay, that's going to be great, and that's going to be great, and now I have to sleep.
I know. How do you keep up?
It's really kind of impossible. Ah, that's too bad. Okay, let's go with a couple of standards. I always have a couple that I ask everybody. One of the things that we love in this podcast is things that bring people together. And one of the biggest things that brings people together is food. So one of the reasons our name is Everybody Loves Pudding. So we always like to ask, are you a pizza person? And if you are, what kind of pizza is your pizza?
Love pizza. And I just always feel like this answer is just so polarizing. It may not bring people together. I love a good ham and pineapple pizza, I gotta say. And then I also add spinach and green pepper to it. So if you love ham and pineapple, you haven't tried it with a little bit of spinach and green pepper.
I think I might have to try that. I've not had that specific combination. Standard marinara?
Yeah, standard marinara. I do love the thick crust. I do love a big fat thick crust. But really, you know, I'm not a pizza purist. I'm not picky about pizza. So when you're late night striking the set of a play and somebody brings in pizza, I'm good with it. I'm good with it, whatever it is.
Yeah, it's hard to go wrong with pizza. At one point, I would have said the other thing that brings people together is comic books, but if you've seen the fandom, maybe not so much. But we still go there because that's kind of what started part of this podcast. We love the intersection of comic books and other media. So I always ask, are you a comic book fan? And if so...
You know, I was as a kid. I grew up with older brothers. And so they were big comic book guys. So I sort of absorbed some of that. And then my kids had a fourth grade teacher who was a huge comic book fanatic. So he did a lot of projects with the kids where he would have them do it in comic book form. And he would even do student assessments. He would write them as a comic book sometimes and draw the kid and do it. He was so great. So, and flip books. Do you remember flip books?
I do.
That's big in our family. We drew some pretty elaborate flip books and my kids were way into that. So,
well, if you had the chance to play any comic book character, whether that's a superhero, a secondary character, whatever, who would you play and why?
Man. Boy, that requires a real working knowledge. I'm sure there are more recent comic books that have better roles for women.
It has
gotten
better.
Because some of the older ones, it's hard to find a good role for a woman other than, you know, what here's a question for you. Here's what I'd like to know, since you're a comic book aficionado.
Yes.
What is a role in a comic book that was originally written as male that you could now see a female playing that?
Well, that's actually kind of a complicated question in the sense that, you know, there's lots of comic book companies out there. And of course, the big two between DC and Marvel. DC always kind of wanted to be able to have it both ways. So if there's a Superman, there's a Supergirl. If there's a Batman, there's a Batgirl. If there is a Flash, there is a female Flash. So they had a lot more representation earlier. Now, was it well thought out in the early parts? Maybe not so much, but they were always willing, it seemed like, to be able to push that a little bit farther than others. On the Marvel side, it's different. I mean, there were occasionally, you know, like the female versions of the characters, but they didn't really. I'd say it really kind of changed around like the X-Men time, because if you look at that group, a lot of the most powerful characters, not just talking about abilities, but in terms of story development, character development, and growth, they were the best characters. I mean, you got Storm, you got Rogue in there, you got Marvel Girl that becomes the Phoenix. I always loved the development of Kitty Pryde as a character, because she goes from just this kind of meek, I don't know what I'm doing, to you don't want to cross her, she will kill you. Kind of a character.
Cool.
So, I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah. I think about Superman as Superman would be fun to play, where a lot of the time you're just a dork in glasses.
Right.
Wallflower doing something academic. I have, you know, it's fascinating to think about as a woman my age, because I'm sort of a tomboy at heart. I'm full on a tomboy at heart, but I never would get to audition for anything like that because I'm petite and, you know, but I think it'd be so fun to play just sort of a ordinary, you know, academic goober who then can go out and just conquer the world. And who would ever guess it would be you? You know, that's fun to think about.
I've got a good one for you. I always also do
Okay.
my perfect casting, or, as perfect as I can get with somebody I've just met. But looking at just the way that the way that you look, the type of roles that you've done, I think if you were able to play Martha Wayne in the Flashpoint universe, that would be a really juicy role and a lot of fun. I don't know if you know who Martha Wayne is.
No, but I let's make
Okay.
this
So
happen. So
Martha.
universe, wait, let's get the universe's attention. Universe,
That's
we're
right.
putting this out here.
Right. So Martha Wayne is the mother of Batman.
Okay.
And in the Flashpoint universe, instead of the parents being killed, Bruce Wayne is killed. And
Okay.
it drives the parents in two different directions. His father becomes Batman instead. She becomes the Joker. And it's just this really, and it's a completely different take on the character. You're talking about that kind of gender flipping things. That's kind of
Yeah.
what that is in a nutshell. And
Yeah.
that was the first thing I thought. I was like, because yes, this person is insane, but it's from a place of grief that
Yeah.
just
Yeah.
guts you. It's, oh, so much fun.
Oh man, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. And I do love, as I get older, getting to play characters that aren't nice. I mean, most of what I've done, if I look back at this last year, I've had a couple characters that were kind of pleasant. But for the most part, I'm the person, I always joke and say my bread and butter is being the person behind the desk who makes it difficult for anybody who's ever been marginalized. That's me. So come ask for something. No, I'm sorry. No, go away.
We've never done that. You can't change things.
But it's great. You know, I love that those stories are being told. And in history, people that look like me were often the ones that were saying no to people who didn't look like me.
You gotta have
So
those parts. That's actually
if
one of
that's
my
my
fa-
role in it, yeah, it's okay.
that's one of my favorite SNL skits where they're doing a fake casting for a movie with slavery in it, and you got to have the ones that are the plantation owners. Like, we'd like you to read for this part. It's like, oh no, I can't say no, I can't do
Ah,
that. How about I
yeah,
play this
it's
nice guy?
yeah, but to you know, I don't know, just to play something meaty and impactful is
Right.
fun in
All
good
right.
in important stories.
Final question. This is
Okay.
also one of my favorites. I ask everybody, just because I like to imagine things. I asked you about the role, but let's say you're taking a stroll down the Colorado Boulevard somewhere, and you're gonna have a nice cup of coffee. You go into a coffee shop, you order, you sit down, and there's a pot of just some sweetener you're gonna pour in there. You accidentally rub it. It's actually a genie's lamp. Genie pops out, but it's a very specialized genie because this was just shipped from Hollywood, and the genie comes out wearing a nice three-piece suit, and he's ready to give you three wishes, but he tells you that the only wishes he can grant is your ability to work with anyone, current, past, present, that you've ever wanted to work with in the entertainment industry. Who would your three people be?
Oh man. Oh man, that is brutal to be put on the spot. Oh man, because I feel like the spot that I'm at, everybody is interesting to me, right? I just watched the Decameron. Have you seen that?
I
The
have
Decameron.
not.
But you pull it up on IMDb. There was a group of people in it. Tony Hale is in it. He's really well known. Like I knew his name and knew his history. And I'm sure, I hate to say this, I'm sure all the people in it have done lots of other things, but they're quite young.
Right.
And I just thought they were all amazing and hilarious. And being on a set like that where everybody's, it truly is a ensemble, you know, everybody carried the weight of the story. Any one of those people, I mean, I know they're not, and it is kind of fun to think about up and coming people and being in that group, you know, like a show where everybody got cast at the same time before they were really known and then they So I that's kind of where my sights are set. It's not like, oh, I need to be on stage with, Cate Blanchett now, or on film with Cate Blanchett or somebody really, known. But she's one. Cate Blanchett is amazing. She has a I don't know. I don't know if I see myself working with her, but man, if I could watch her work, I guess. Yeah, put me at a dinner party scene with Cate Blanchett.
Well, she always connects very well with people with her who she works with, and that's kind of a rare thing, a piece that can fit in any puzzle.
Kieran Culkin is another one who I think his acting style is so interesting. I think he's so, there's such a pure essence of him that comes through in everything, and yet he can play a lot of different things. There are actors who they're always doing that thing. And you, like, I was watching him make his speech at the Golden Globes, and he seemed a lot like Roman from Succession. You can see a lot of that. He's a lot of his character. So I always admire that when people bring that thing that is them to their role, but they are elevating it to play something else. I think that's really great. It's not, doesn't always have to be about, oh, you were unrecognizable. I had no idea who that person was. That style, that Succession style of acting is so great too. Just the things I've heard about that set is it was scripted. The writers are great. We have to give writers lots of credit. But then they'd run a scene and they'd say, okay, now just make it your own. So they'd hit all the points, but hence all the talking over each other and so many things that could be just, sometimes a scene would literally just be, you can't wait, what, you, how can you, what, you fuck off, da-da-da. And the scene is done and something did happen. But like, so that style of acting, I think it'd be really fun. That kind of starting with the West Wing. Remember the West Wing, how everybody was so blown away by just the words and the rapid fire and people talking over each other and
That
da-da-da-da-da. I
Sorkin-esque
talk
delivery.
fast, I think fast. I think it would be fun to be involved in something like that. Do I have to think of a third? And these are not, I'm sure, like, I'm
There's
gonna have
no
to send an
wrong
email.
answer.
I'm gonna say, wait, here are six others that but who do I look at now that I just think is so tasty and yummy as an actor? Oh man, I can't think. I just say both of those show, take anyone from West Wing, anyone from Succession. Oh, Matthew McFadden. Can we talk about him for a minute?
Oh, yeah.
Come on. Come on. I love Billy Crudup. He would be fun. There was a woman in Denver who was doing some theater, and she said, I'm gonna do this play, and I'm gonna try to get you and Billy Crudup in the lead. I was like, what?
Yes,
It's like,
please.
that would be a fun matchup, but that's like, how do you get there? I was like, okay, yeah, have you talked to him about that? Might want to give him a ring. But yeah, he's amazing. His work in The Morning Show is
Just so good.
amazing.
Well, I like your answers, and I've had just a ball talking to you today. I would very much like to pass on to our listeners the best way to keep updated with your new stuff. What's the best social media? What's the best way to just kind of know your next stuff that's coming out?
IMDb is always great. I've got some exciting credits up there of things that haven't aired yet, and then they get added as they do air. I had a good year this year, so there's a bunch of new stuff coming out. And then, yeah, my Instagram is at Mac Amy. I'm always happy to have people join in or message me there. So Mac, MACK, Amy, AMIE. I just keep that open for now because nothing's really gone wrong. So that works. But yeah, those two are probably the best.
Well, fantastic. Well, we will keep our eyes out. If you haven't seen Dexter, the new Dexter show, check it out. I mean, it will make her presence will make an indelible mark on your memory.
It's brief, but yeah, brief but
That's
memorable.
right. That's right. But it's good. She helps to make the show what it is, and that's all you can ever hope for. And I hope that you will come back on the show when you have some more stuff that is going to be coming out and some cool things that are happening. We'd love to talk to you again.
I would be delighted. Thanks for having me. This was really fun. It was nice to meet you. I hope we stay connected. That was really fun.
All right. Woo!
Go team!